Arthur's notes. Well, it's been a wild ride, and I hope that you've enjoyed reading Queen's Gambit as much as I've enjoyed writing it. In the year plus that Gambit has been in progress, the Star Wars fandom has had the last season of the Clone Wars released, the EU has become Legends, an entire season of a brand new show, Rebels, has aired, books and comics have come out, and fortunately for my own peace of mind, a whole new movie hasn't come out in the meantime. But a whole lot has happened. A whole lot has changed. When I first started plotting Gambit last year, I knew that I wanted it to occupy two distinct and somewhat contradictory positions. I knew that it was going to be the second story in a trilogy, the Ouroboros trilogy. I also knew that I wanted it to function as the first story in an utterly theoretical trilogy. The universe that the characters of the Gambitverse occupy existed before the Wave crew arrived. It will continue to exist, now that they've departed, because for them it was just a stopover, the same way that the OT universe was in Wake the Storm. That story hasn't concluded, and for that reason, Gambit concludes with a galaxy that has been utterly changed and a handful of loose ends, as well as set up for plot lines that would be significant in the theoretical second and third stories of what was plotted as a trilogy. Sometime in the next couple of days, I'm going to write up what those plot lines were and post it on Tumblr. I'll edit this to link it here when it's done. I hope that I've succeeded in making the Gambitverse feel as whole and significant for you as it is for me. Behind-the-scenes trivia, commentary, and cutscenes are available on Tumblr. I want to thank Julie, who's been there ever since I emailed her last year and said, "Hey, can I toss some world-building at you for the new alternate universe that's introduced at the end of Wake? I want to make sure it stands up." And since then, has endured emails, tweets, and Tumblr posts, not to mention getting barraged with chapters and scenes from Gambit. This story would not exist if it weren't for her. To Cass, Alex, Kablob, and everyone else on Tumblr, Twitter, Dreamwith, and AO3 who has ever talked with me about Gambit, or written a review, or drawn art for it, thank you. And you, if you're reading this, thank you. This was a hell of a long road, and you made it an infinitely better one to travel. The third and final story in the Ouroboros trilogy will be called All Along the Watchtower. May the Force be with you. I'll see you on the other side. Reader's Notes. Holy shit, you guys! Holy shit! It's over! Queen's Gambit is actually over. I have been working on this podfic since May of 2017. It is now New Year's Eve of 2017. I finished this recording at 11:57. Or not this recording, but chapter 34, the last chapter. At 11:57 on December 27th. I actually finished that one early. There was a couple chapters in there where I recorded the day they were going to be posted. I posted the first chapter, the prologue and the first chapter, on May 21st, and it's been a long fucking 7 months, as evidenced by everybody who stuck along for this entire fucking ride. I actually started recording the first couple chapters when I hadn't quite finished reading the story yet, so about chapter 28 onward, of what happens in the story's events. I hadn't read that when I first recorded chapters 1 through 6 of the podfic and then posted the first couple chapters. But I finished it, and then I kept going and I kept reading it all because, you know, that's what you do. I also just had about 2/3 of a bottle of $8 pink wine, so we're about to get real with the feelings or something. I have to say a thank you to both of my roommates who are Fanish people, but I'm not going to name names because I don't think they want people knowing where they live. I have been talking about this project literally at least every other day since May of 2017, and they never once said, "You're a crazy person, put that down and go do something short." They cheerleaded me. It was great. And when I was taken like 4 hour blocks to record in the pillow fort, nobody was like, hey, shut up. I don't care about Star Wars. I can hear you through the walls, which is great. Now, both my roommates were really supportive, especially when I would come out of the room and be like, oh my God, a thing is happening. And hey, I don't have to worry about spoilers anymore. You've listened to the whole podfic. You know what happens. I can spoil you for shit. So we'll get to those in a minute. I also need to give, like, the most overwhelming thank you to Bessie Boo and Night Tracer, who were the beta listeners for this entire podfic. Bessie Boo and Night Tracer and that direct message chain that goes back to May 14th of 2017, when I was like, hey, by the way, you both love Star Wars and also don't hate me. Here you go. Bessie Boo has been a beta for me for a lot of my beta listener for a lot of my really long projects. Unfortunately, this time I do not have a tape of her saying, that's not how you say clitoris, and then me doing multiple takes of the word clitoris. If you're interested in that, you should check out the podfic How Not to Fly, which is Stargate Atlantis, and one of the first big projects that Bessie Boo and I ever worked on together. So, yeah, that's where that beta note come from. And Night Tracer was super good about this whole thing. There were a couple moments of, like, I edit as I go, which is basically you keep talking until you hear yourself mess up, and then you start over again, just, like, going back a couple seconds. And when Bethlehem Spard writes, she writes these really amazing evocative sentences, but some of them are four goddamn lines long. And there were a couple places where, like, okay, there's only so much pausing you can do with a comma in the middle. So there were a couple places where I started swearing about, basically, they go down, it boils down to fuck you, fuck your mother, fuck your mother's goats. Everything is terrible. Why are you like this? Why do I like this hobby? and usually I cut those bits out and re-record. And there was a chapter where I forgot to do that. And Night Tracer was really nice about being like, hey, by the way, you should probably take this out because you got a little sweary. Which I appreciate. I don't think I actually saved that, though. But basically, every time I had a verbal flub, I started swearing. I used to just make, like, a grumpy face and start over. No. Starting around chapter 7 of Queen's Gambit, I started swearing. And that's a habit I have now. It's been 7 months and I haven't dropped it. I say a lot more fuck than I thought I would. Usually I don't get too sweary with my, or I didn't used to, and then this podfic happened, and now it's a thing. So, Night Tracer and Bessie Boo every week for the last 34 weeks have been amazing about me dropping shit in their inbox and them listening to all of these chapters, you know, so that I could put up at least the, you know, the good version. Some of their editing notes I did not take into account because I couldn't hear it. I think Bessie Boo's gotten a ridiculously better setup than I do because, yeah, okay, sometimes there's traffic noises outside, but also I can't hear some of the sounds that Bessie Boo can. I don't know, that may be a problem down the road. We'll just keep moving on. And, okay, note. Night Tracer in the podfic Snapchats from Coruscant, edited by Bessie Boo, has this whole bit of like 20 seconds of just Anakin, 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 and every time I lost Obi-Wan's voice in this podfic, I would just do that. I would just be like, Anakin, and basically quote that portion of the podfic. So my Obi-Wan voice is my imitation of Night Tracer's Obi-Wan voice. So that's where that came from. Other voices that were really difficult to me were the Supreme Chancellor's. Palpatine's, not Dooku's, although Dooku's also, because I can't do accent-y accents, but I can do sort of intonation changes or inflection changes for voices. And Dooku just basically got, this is my deep voice, and it is slow and ponderous, because I am Obi-Wan's evil Jedi grandpa. You know, like that. But for the for Palpatine's voice, it's half, I am this really patronizing grandfatherly type, condescending and everything, and so you have to get it to sound smarmy. And half of it is I'm like a cackling evil Muppet, because that's what he sounds like in, you know, the original trilogy. He's like laughing like a goober while electrocuting people and whatever. And so I was a little anxious about that, but whatever. I had so many fucking feelings about this story. I have a ridiculous fondness for alternate universes where things go wrong and things go dark and things like, it turns out that everybody's serial killers or something like that. If you're interested in something like that, check out the Crimes Against Humanity podfic. It's actually Stargate Atlantis, but everybody from SGA is a serial killer or, you know, a cult leader or whatever, and they're all in intergalactic prison, and it's great. That's the kind of AU I'm really down for. And this was fantastic because it took basically everything that was a virtue of our characters, Padme's, like, her conviction in her principles, and Obi-Wan's loyalty, and I guess Anakin's smart mouth, and it turned them slightly, like, you could have just had, like, oh, okay, here's the one thing that didn't happen, and then whatever, the universe goes on. No, the one thing that didn't happen, and then consequences, and consequences that made sense. And then you just see these little tiny spider-webbing cracks through Universe B. And it makes... Bedlam's Bar did such a good job with, like, all the political intrigue and the showing how this universe is starting to crumble around the edges. Because you still feel very, these are my main characters, I want to root for them. But at the same time, are they really? Because the Padme I know would never, or whatever, right? Except, funny story, when I started recording this podfic, I had never seen the prequel trilogy movies. I know. I grew up in the 90s, and I should have watched them, at least Phantom Menace, when it came out. But that was the same summer Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone came out, and I made a bet with my friend Max in fifth grade that I could read it 100 times over that summer, and I only got to 52 times, and he didn't even pay up anyway, so, like, fuck him. But, yeah, I was distracted. And then I just didn't get into the prequels the way I had been into the original trilogy movies. And, I mean, I grew up on the novelizations, and we went to this panel at SDCC where it was all of the new writers for the Star Wars universe, and they weren't taking questions, but if they had, I would totally have asked. Because all these writers were talking about how reading the comics, reading the EU novels, they shaped who they were as people. It's why they became writers. But now they have to write, like, the Disney-approved canon. And I wanted to ask, how does the EU influence what you write and how you write now in ways that you can't acknowledge? But they didn't take questions, and also that's a tangent. So the point was, I hadn't seen the prequel trilogy movies before I started recording this. And actually, I've only just seen The Phantom Menace about 2 weeks ago, because when The Last Jedi came out, FX, TNT, one of the cable networks, was doing Star Wars Weekend, and in prep, we watched the Star Wars Weekend marathon, and Phantom Menace was on. And there's that scene where Padme Amidala is like, I will not condone any action that leads to war, and I'm sorry, honey, but that is not the Queen Amidala that I know from this universe. And I had a moment of character dissonance before realizing that, like, the Padme Amidala characterization from Universe B in Queen's Gambit is, like, now my headcanon for all Padme Amidalas. Also, this story made Quinlan Vos my most favorite character in the fucking Star Wars universe. He's my honey, my baby, my darling child, my whatever. Okay, something words. I actually, because of this story, picked up, and also on recommendation of Keeper Seeds, maybe somebody Star Wars on my Twitter feed, I picked up the audiobook for Dark Disciple, which is the Quinlan Vos Asajj Ventress fic, the novelization. And I had to put it down, I started listening to it while still midway through this, around chapter 24, or no, chapter 18? Yeah, chapter 18 or so. And then I had to put it down because I got very worried that the way that author's, like, prose, and also the way that audiobook reader, the way he conveyed things. I was very worried it was going to impact the way my delivery of Queen's Gambit came out. I do love the way the Star Wars audiobooks incorporate so much soundscaping, which is something I have a little bit of regret for not including in Queen's Gambit, but also it's 40 fucking hours. I'm not doing a soundscape for 40 fucking hours. Maybe on a smaller podfic, that would be actually a really cool experiment, because it's so great. Like, you get 2.5 seconds of, like, a speeder sound, but suddenly you're in this place where you can absolutely see, you know, traffic of Coruscant rushing by, and it's just such a visceral experience when you're listening to their audiobooks. The Star Wars audiobooks are great for me. I do also love how the Star Wars audiobooks have, like, the Star Wars theme intro music. And Bedlam's Bard, when I first started recording this, was really amazing about providing me with basically the mix they listened to as they were writing the story. So I incorporated their playlist plus a couple songs that I picked and then remixed it. It's not the same order as the Tumblr post that Bedlam's Bard provided me with. And that's how the fan mix for Queen's Gambit, which is going to be called Long Live the Queen as soon as I get around to posting that as an associated work, so you guys can take that with you on your phones and have the full version of the songs, how that came to be. And also, yes, the Linkin Park track that was not one of Bedlam's Bard's original soundtrack moments. That one was me. I'm not sorry. Actually, for that chapter, I had a minute and 15 seconds of intro, and Bessie Boo was like, do we need this much Linkin Park? So that's why that intro is shorter, for Bessie Boo's sensibilities. There's this one, there's this one section, which I can't remember what chapter it's in now, but it's Lady Jedi Knight, whose name I cannot remember which one it was. I feel like it was Adi Gallia, and then Ki-Adi Mundi, and I think they're in the Senate, and they just came out of talking to Count, or they're in the one of the Senate buildings, and they're come talking to Count Dooku, and they've just brought the clone army. The Republic has just bought their clone troopers, and they're incorporating them into the Gar. And Ki-Adi Mundi says, "Well, it's not like they're real people." And I had to stop recording when that section happened, because you're so used to, like people frame the Jedi Order as being, you know, kind of romanticized and, like, the be-all end-all. So, like, you know, they're the good guys. So obviously they're good people. No, some of them are hella racist. And, like, I get it. That's what Bedlam's Bard was trying to convey. And they did it so fucking well. But, like, I had to stop recording because my reaction was to yell at the text about, like, why are you so terrible? Also, if you hear any random jangling, I got the Princess Leia, Alex, and Ani bracelet for Christmas, and I keep doing this all day. I wore it to work, and I just kept doing that, and it was great. Princess Leia is watching you and watching me and judging you for your poor life choices. so, yeah, that just such a visceral reaction. I had to stop and sort of come back to the text after that moment because, well, it's not like they're real people. Yes! They are! They're distinct in the Force! Obviously the clones are real people! And I have a lot of feelings about Jango Fett and his army of Mandalorian children who he did not take responsibility for, and also there's some notfic that either will become a notfic post, or maybe I'll clean it up a little bit. There's a line at the very beginning of hang on, where'd it go? Oh, here we go. Okay, so there's a line at the very beginning of chapter 2 where, you've already heard me say this at least once, but whatever. It's a pity Obi-Wan didn't take up with Duchess Satine instead of Queen Amidala. If he'd been a pacifist peacekeeper rather than a warmonger's weapon, we wouldn't be in this position. So, basically, for the first time in, like, 4 years since I was in, basically, bandom, I was inspired to start writing again, which is ridiculous. I haven't had this kind of feeling about a fandom in a really long time. So thank you, Bedlam's Bard, for writing this fucking masterpiece and this fucking massive universe that I basically want to live in, because now I care about all of these characters in a way that, you know, the extended universe isn't meeting my needs. But okay, Obi-Wan as Satine's pacifist, you know, I will actively work to pacify you, as opposed to Padme sort of encouraging his more ruthless tendencies. I don't know. I have a lot of feelings about Obi-Wan and Satine and Mandalorian culture as being basically the ancient Roman Empire of Star Wars, and Jango Fett and his army of children, and how, you know, one of the rules, one of the Rezonare, one of the six tenets of Mandalorian culture is about being a parent and parenting your children, and I have feelings about that. And then, like, basically, Jango Fett runs off and gets himself fucking decapitated or whatever, and he leaves Boba Fett. And Boba Fett has also got terrible parenting. His daughter wants to actively kill him, and I think, you know, she does. It's great. Good for her. But also, fuck, you are not upholding the Rezonare tenets. And then you get to poor fucking Rex, and he is abandoned by his Jedi parental units. I'm doing air quotes here. And it's just so much. It's just so much. You just want them to be fucking happy. And no, he's abandoned in an alternate universe where he'll never get fucking home. He'll never see his brothers ever again. He'll have to make new ones. And Alpha doesn't even like him yet. Ow. But, so that was a feeling I had. And then at Podfication, which was the Podfic Con held in Minnesota this past October. I was in the middle of still recording this, as evidenced by the fact that it's December now, and got very, very loudly excited about this story with many supportive people who, I mean, part of it was they were supportive and part of it was that I cornered them and wouldn't let them leave. But I want to give a shout out to our cats for sitting with me and Bessie Boo and letting us both yell at her about Star Wars, because I had a lot of feelings from recording the story, and Arcats was really good about listening to that. And also to Sweden, who keeps linking me to all of these time travel fix-it fix, and I almost want to say that this counts because they are, well, not really fixing anything, and also alternate universe as opposed to time travel, but it does have, like, a, here is an impact on the timeline, and here is the way the consequences come out of it. I didn't have this many feelings about the Jedi Order being full of fuckwits once upon a time, and now I do, and I can't get rid of them, and I'm not sure how they tie in with my feelings about The Last Jedi, except I kind of agree with some of Luke's arguments. I don't know. I don't have as much background in Knights of the Old Republic type stuff about, like, Jedi schism and everything like that, but I love how it's a recurring theme. Revan's cure, like, brain wiping is bad, is, like, this recurring theme. And, of course, it's the kind of thing that you have to keep repeating, because sometimes people are like, oh, maybe it's not. Maybe if I do it, it's okay, because I'm the good guy. But by doing the thing, it makes you a bad guy, because good guys wouldn't do that. So then you get this, again, it's like this, you were wearing these tinted glasses while looking at the Jedi Order, and then you, because they're the good guys, they must be good people. But actually, no, they're, a lot of them are kind of terrible. Which led me to roundabout way of thinking, conversation I had with one of my roommates while in the middle of the last 7 months while recording this and having feelings, like, in the slightly creepier universe, which is probably not the universe that Bedlam Squad is writing in the next installation of the story, where you would think, like, midichlorians, mitochondria, the Force runs in families, we want to have an order full of Force-using people. Now you have to breed. Creepier universe, where the Jedi are basically handmaidens made to breed more Force users. if someone wants to take that plot bunny and run with it, go for it. I will probably podfic it too, because I have a lot of feelings about fucking creepy. But, like, If you know that a talent of the Force is, if not mind control, like mind control slash manipulation, there's a line in the epilogue in chapter 34 where Quinlan goes like, Obi-Wan is not in the room. It's Quinlan and Luminara talking about how Stoss's picture is on the poster of Most Wanted. And Quinlan says, yeah, but we talked to Obi-Wan. Stoss probably hasn't talked to him in 10 years. And I have a lot of feelings about basically Force suggestion, whether intentional or not, being sort of like inherent in the Jedi's use of the Force. And I don't want to say anything bad about Obi-Wan because Knight Obi-Wan is fantastic. And in General Kenobi and, you know, with the ass kicking and taking names and the ruthlessness. And I do enjoy it a lot because that was such a good Obi-Wan Kenobi for me. But like, even the Jedi are kind of aware that their words hold more weight than just words, you know, which leads you to thinking about this order. And if your words have that capability of, you know, compulsion or persuasion, then things that, oh yeah, it's okay because I'm a good guy and I'm the one doing it, passed down over 1,000 years, and you say it with enough oomph, suddenly you get the Jedi Order of the End of the Republic. Anyway, I have feelings about the Jedi Order being kind of full of terrible people. I also did not realize I would come to care about the Handmaidens as much as I did. I just love them a lot and how they're so hyper competent and like they're just so good at their jobs and they're willing to run the entire fucking planet while Padme's off doing, you know, galactic upheaval, which is so good. So good. And then I just all of these moments where Bevelinsbard had a bunch of, like, hero lines from the original trilogy movies. Like, Ani had a couple of Han Solo's lines. And it was just so good for me to have, like, yes, here's a nod back to the original text. Can I match it? I don't know. On the one hand, holy fuck, it's over, you guys! I finished it! I've never done a work-in-progress podfic before in the last 7 years of podfic. So it feels really good to have completed this work in progress project, and also to have so many people be like interested and following along, and you know, a couple of people, some people, whatever, not important. The point is that there were at least 4 people who actively cared about this podfic coming to completion, and I've never done a project that lasted this long with this kind of steady momentum. So now that it's come to an end, it's like, shit, I accomplished a goal. 2017 was not a complete and utterly worthless year because I did this.
Actually, speaking about long-term projects in a way that wasn't really anticipating keeping the momentum, at 12.07 a.m. on December 11th, I know this because Twitter keeps the date and timestamp, I sent the following DM to Bessie Boo and Night Tracer. I just had a super paranoid thought. If I get hit by a city bus before Queen's Gambit is finished, I need you both to be my second and make sure the last 2 chapters get recorded. This podfic needs to be finished. I'm deputizing you both in case of my untimely demise in the next 3 weeks. And I had to swear both of them in as my second in case I died before it got finished, because that was a thing that occurred to me at 12 in the morning. It was so close to being done, but it might not get done. But thankfully, both Bessie Boo and Night Tracer were like, yes, of course, you are being ridiculously absurd, but also we will finish this for you if you should end up hit by a city bus. Look both ways before crossing the street. But yeah, this project has taken over my brain, and that was the point that I reached. Right around chapter 32. But, like, at the same time,
I am not ready to step away from this universe at all. At all. I I've lived in this universe for such a long time, and it must be even worse for Bedlam's Bard for how long it took to write this in the first place. This fucking massive, amazing universe full of, like, twists and turns and logical consequences and just so much good shit here. So I'm a little worried about that. But there is also a post about what happens next in Universe B, which I will be recording as well, so keep your eye out on that. I'm thinking it's going to be the first thing I put up for 2018, welcoming the new year with a continuation, but also a conclusion. Also, I can't believe I totally forgot to mention this. Keeper of Seeds has recorded the story that takes place immediately before this, Wake the Storm, which is about Ani, not Ani, Ani is Universe B, Anakin Skywalker's sort of time travel slash alternate universe into the original trilogy movies, which is what started me in this Star Wars spiral in the first place. I have always been a Star Wars fan. We had the VHS tapes of the original trilogy. We got them for my dad for Christmas one year. It was kind of a big deal because it was a box set with Darth Vader's face on the side. Whatever. I had to, you know, we still have it someplace, so we don't have a VCR anymore. And I grew up on the Extended Universe novels with, like, stories of Leia's children and Luke's children and Mara Jade and, like, the fucking Yuuzhan Vong. But I didn't really care about the prequel stuff. And then I was on a bus to Boston and Keeper of Seeds podfake was on my phone because I'm a sucker for long podfake. And then it was like, oh shit, Bessie Boo. I'm having fucking feelings again. But Bessie Boo was really good about, like, you know, fucking enabling me. And then, so yeah, the podfake of Wake the Storm, I would not have picked the fic up on my own because I was, like, adamantly, I don't care about the prequels. I only care about the children. But I did. I cared about Anakin Skywalker. Not even as, like, a burning corpse. I cared about actual Anakin Skywalker. The hell? And then this story happened, and then Bedlam's Bard was like, yeah, sure, you could podfic it. That's great. And I was like, okay, now I'm drowning. And it's been 7 months, and here we are. is it presumptuous of me to call dibs on a thing that hasn't been written yet about the potential possible sequel that may not even happen or may not happen for years and years or I don't know, because I totally called dibs. So yeah, like 8,000 thank yous to Bessie Boo and Night Tracer and Bedlam's Bard for letting me live in your brain for the last 7 months. And to Keeper of Seeds for making me care about these people in that way that made me continue to care about them. And now I'm recording, like, you know, a monster fic of this and continuing for, like, other things in this universe. Well, the Star Wars universe in general, not this universe. Although there are a couple other stories within the Ouroboros series. So we're not counting those out yet. And thank you to both of my roommates for putting up with me for the last 7 months as I keep living in this pillow fort, recording and recording and recording. And also, can I just, like, okay, this, all this cultural stuff with the Naboo, like, with the, we live in the water and we have, like, a bathing culture, and we have, like, rules and etiquette about the hot tub, and Padme and Obi-Wan, and they're like, oh yeah, we can't have sex in the tub, but we can have sex next to the tub. That's not rude. And then threesome! And then fade to black. Fade to black! But, yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, I feel like I came into Star Wars prequel trilogy much more on the Obi-Wan Padme side than I fell into Obi-Wan Padme Anakin and then also Obi-Wan Anakin, but I didn't super ship Anakin Padme. I don't know. Obi-Wan and Padme and, like, space pen pals and, like, Tamara Pierce's wild magic sort of Diane and Numair kind of dynamic. Yeah, that's where I like it. Anyway, so Bedlam's Bard has written a fuck ton of words. I have recorded a fuck ton of words. There is going to be a fan mix that will come out as soon as I get around to compiling that zip file and cover art. Mix is going to be called Long Live the Queen! And also, probably the first week of 2018, the podfic of What Happens Next in Universe B. This universe, I don't really want to give it up now, because I've been living in it for so long. Like, dedicated Thursday afternoons and also sometimes Sunday mornings, because Sunday was my posting day. But, yeah, it's time to wrap it up and say goodbye and finish watching Clone Wars. And I did tell myself once I finished recording this podfic that I could watch the prequel movies. So, this New Year's, I am actually going up to visit my sister at her fancy new apartment. But possibly, if not this New Year's, then the week after New Year's, I will be watching parts 2 and 3 of the prequels trilogy. And then I will probably be kicking myself for not noticing things. Like, for example, okay, Satine. I was calling her Satine Cries. I was watching the Clone Wars episode the other day, the one where the Mandalorian plot, or just after the Mandalorian plot, and the robot says, "Freeze, Satine Cries." And I have decided that that robot has an accent. Not that I said her name wrong 12 times over the course of 40 hours, but that the robot has an accent. I'm not going back in and changing it, and you can't make me. any other names or, like, weird pronunciation moments if I got some hutties wrong, please leave me an audio file in the comments. I'm not going to go back in and change it, but I'll know better for next time. So, yeah, in the grand scheme of things, I mean, I just talked for half an hour about recording this and making shit happen. In the grand scheme of things, it's not that long because you just spent 40-odd hours listening to me talk. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you've had as much fun rolling around in this universe as I have. I hope you love Quinlan Voss the same way I do, because he deserves better, and he has fucking psychometry. Do you know what, like, literally, fucking and psychometry. Like, on the one hand, it could be kind of awkward, because every time you go to a hotel, it's like, oh, I know exactly who else was on these sheets. But also, like, if not touched, basically touched telepathy, what other way of knowing what your partner likes? Like, that's fantastic. Plus, give me all the stories of, like, Quinlan Voss and Ayla, and Quinlan the spy, with his great talent for touching shit that he shouldn't. And, like, did his psychometry happen as part of puberty? Was he born with it? Is it something that, like, you know, you're born with it faintly and it gets more as you get older? Is it something that, like, you know, he woke up one morning and then he was like, oh no, I can never jerk off again because I know where that's been, or something like that, whatever. Of course, all Jedi things lead to sex. Yeah. Now I get to listen to Dark Disciple now that I finished this, because that guy's vocal patterns are not going to influence mine. Other things in this story that I'm kind of proud of are the robot voices. I messed around with some filters in GarageBand and they came out really well. And Yoda's voice. I feel like in this universe, Yoda is a colder and more distant kind of mentor, because his line is basically disintegrated and all of his Jedi children are dead or disowned. And I think that kind of came across in my performance of his voice, but also fucking Yoda voice. Yoda's fucking voice. Fucking Yoda voice it is. Like, what the hell? Why is he like that? Why, Frank Oz? Why are you like that? Where was I going with this? I think I was trying to wrap up. Yes. Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. Please leave a comment or a kudos or a shout into the ether that you have listened to this. And leave feedback for Bedlam's Bard for creating this masterpiece of a universe that we all get to roll around in. And also, Thank you to Bessie Boo and Nitricer for just putting up with my shit for the last 7 months. Seriously, you guys are amazing. And now I'm gonna finish the rest of the bottle of wine. And, yeah, I guess pregame for New Year's. So thanks, everybody. It's been a pleasure taking you on this journey with me. Who knew I had so many Star Wars feelings? No, I did. That's a lie. 2019, when Star Wars Galaxy's Edge opens and fucking MGM, I'm going to basically move into that hotel. It's going to be amazing. I'm going to wear all of my Star Wars dresses. It's going to be fantastic.
So, yeah, this is the end of this chapter. And please feel free to drop a comment someplace if you have a scene you want to talk about, a feeling you want to talk about, a plot bunny you want to talk about. I'm not great at answering comments or leaving my own comments, but also I do love having rando conversations about things and having feelings, so I will make the effort for 2018. That'll be my new, that'll be my goal. Clear out the inbox and engage with everyone else on the internet. And yeah, I would love to talk to people about this because I've been living in this universe for the last 7 fucking months. So thank you for joining me on this journey. Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed it and have a nice day.